AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The Trump administration coming for so-called sanctuary states and cities. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced she's suing New York's governor, attorney general, and motor vehicles chief over the state's sanctuary laws, which, among other things, bar police during traffic stops from asking about immigration status.
New York has chosen to prioritize illegal aliens over American citizens. It stops today.
She previously sued Illinois and Chicago, and she warns they're going after others.
If you are a state not complying with federal law, you're next. Get ready.
After talking with Russia's Putin, President Trump said the two leaders agreed that negotiations on ending the Ukraine war should begin immediately. Once one of the most powerful figures in Illinois politics, a federal jury in Chicago convicted 82-year-old former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan on corruption charges. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Marquette ends their losing streak. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Marquette with a victory last night over DePaul, 68-58 in Milwaukee. The Golden Eagles have struggled from behind the three-point line. I asked Marquette Stevie Mitchell on why it's been that way most of the season.
That's just how the game goes. I think, you know, there's players, teams that can shoot the ball poorly and then, you know, shoot the ball really well on any given night. So, you know, we're really proud of the win today because we shot the ball poorly and we're able to win ugly. And I think that's something we struggled to do the past three games, you know, when it got rough, when it got hard. You know, we weren't resilient like we were today in terms of just, you know, finding a way to win anyway, not getting caught up in, you know, our missed shots, not getting caught up in, you know, things that we really can't control and just doubling down on all things we can control.
NBA, it's the Bucks and the Timberwolves tonight in Minnesota, their last game heading into the All-Star break this weekend. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The 2025 Wisconsin football schedule is here, and you should be too. Season tickets are on sale now, so don't miss your chance to jump around at Camp Randall Stadium this fall. Last year, 6 of 7 home games were sellouts, proof that there's nothing like game day with the Badgers. Secure your spot for marquee matchups against Ohio State, Washington, and Iowa, and enjoy the best value to see Wisconsin football in action. For more information and to get your season tickets, visit ewbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hey, guess what? We're never going to find out who Trump is entertaining at the White House. You remember the whole, when the Clinton era was going on, we found out, you know, they, because of the logs that they were, you know, selling access to the Lincoln bedroom. We don't get to know that anymore. And I guarantee you they're making good on all of those opportunities. Because look, this administration, they're running government like a business, a for-profit business for them. So, again, we don't get to know who's visiting the White House. They are not going to release the visitor logs. And surprise, surprise, did it the last time around. Very authoritarian move, very much in what you would expect. Now, interestingly enough, my red hats, when I posed it that, you know, there was a time when Joe Biden wasn't going to release the logs, got very, very indignant, and then said, well, what do you think of Trump not doing it? Well, he's doing important business. It's amazing, the double standard. But not surprising, not shocking. Now, what we find out is Trump wants to significantly reduce the federal workforce because he hates the federal workforce. You know, the deep state. You know, the people who take care of you, getting Social Security, people work at the VA, people who do all the work that our federal government needs and does. Yeah, executive order evidently directing agencies to work with Doge Boy. And they're going to limit hiring. They're going to fire people. And we're gutting the size of government. And understand, you're going to put a guy who's worth almost half $1 trillion in charge of firing people who make 50, 60 grand a year. Tops. Yeah, that, I got to tell you, it doesn't sit well with me when you have someone who has the kind of outsized wealth that Musk has and has gotten it through massive federal contracts. I mean, to be honest, the biggest welfare queen in the history of this nation is Elon Musk. Got lots of his money from the federal government and lots of technology transfers and lots of, it's amazing to me that that doesn't get said enough. We created this guy and now he's turning around and kicking the ladder off the side of the building. He climbed up, not from the bottom, mind you. Family was loaded. Came here an undocumented immigrant. Illegal. His own brother said so. And is now the richest man in the world. And now wants to slam that door for anyone else by gutting any agency that can hold him accountable. By gutting any agency that's going to ensure that he doesn't get to do all the things he's doing. For instance, Musk's team is going after the Department of Education. They have announced a ton of cuts, totaling some $900 million. And the idea is, you know, to basically gut and hobble the Institute of Education Services. Or the Education Sciences. Because, hey, what we want more than anything is a populace who's not educated. Because you can sell them anything. And I think it's been working. Now, you got Musk running around saying, you know, the federal government, it's a bureaucracy and it's riddled with fraud and abuse and waste and all of this stuff. Now, remember, you know, all of these agencies, all of these sections, they're appropriated by Congress. You've got Musk coming and say, and again, this has been the mantra of the Republicans for decades now. That's all waste. The government doesn't do anything. They're inefficient. They're all these things. And he's just taking it to the next level. He's made all of these assertions without any evidence that he or his team has found major fraud and waste. Now, are people doing things that he doesn't like? Yeah, they're jobs. Now, the weird thing for me, again, I keep coming back to this. Because you got Musk and the Doge boys, you know, in there ferreting deep inside our government and our spending. When Musk has a lot of conflicts of interests, there are agencies across our government that are leading investigations from him, enforcing certain things. There are lawsuits against his companies. There are all these things that I got to tell you, got to wonder. How many things get lost in the shuffle? Now, the weird thing is Musk was quoted in the Washington Post. He said that we have an unelected fourth unconstitutional branch of government, which is the bureaucracy. Again, it's the bureaucracy. You know, first it was the deep state. Every other word out of their mouths was deep state. And now it's the bureaucracy. Get used to hearing that a lot. Because what Trump is really upset about is these people, these workers, were doing their job. They were doing what they were congressionally mandated to do. You know, follow the law. Something that Trump and Musk and that crowd doesn't understand. I started off by saying, you know, Trump's not releasing the logs of people who come to visit. And I gotta imagine there's some financial gain for him in that. But Musk also, in all of this, will not have to make any financial disclosures. We don't know anything about what he's doing or how he is profiting, but we're going to take his word that there's waste, fraud, and abuse, and we're going to hear lots of little cute nuggets from internet trolls and from meme monsters and from think tanks, you know, screwing around with things and going, well, you know, I heard that, you know, we're giving billions of dollars to, you know, to mice, you know, chasing ants in a hole. You go, what? There are cats walking on treadmills. And you go, yeah, there was probably someone doing that. But why? And we're never going to ask that next question. We're never going to ask about what is actually being done. And understand, you know, as we're gutting the FDA, as we're gutting the CDC, as we're gutting the National Institute of Health, as we're going through and destroying all of this stuff, we've got real problems. The Wall Street Journal had a piece, said that Elon Musk, Trump's billionaire ally and the leader of the U.S. Doge service, had argued that the new NIH policy would cut administrative waste. And then they go in and say, look, university leaders, scientists, and even some Republicans have warned that it would devastate academia, harm efforts to research cancer, Alzheimer's, or just about anything. When you stop investing in tomorrow, when you stop investing in researching, you know, the things that are trying to kill us, we're going to fall far back. And that's what they want. That's who these people are. Understand that. We've never had someone like Elon Musk in our government. There's never been an unpaid special White House staffer with the kind of potential conflict of interest and the, while being the richest man in the world, and have the kind of access to our information and our government's inner workings. It's irresponsible, I believe, of Trump. But understand, these people don't believe in government. They don't want government. They believe that libertarian, you know, the free market, hooray for me and the heck with everyone else, because they're at the top of the heap. And for my red hat friends who think, well, that's a good world to live in, it means you too. When they do away with the Department of Labor and you have no more OSHA, you have no more National Labor Relations Board, you have no more wage and hour division to ensure you don't get cheated out of your wages, where there's no one there to protect you from corporate abuses. Maybe only then do we wake up to the reality that we need each other. And this is where my mind is. I've had a couple people going, Rick, you don't seem to be as freaked out as everyone else. And I'm really not. I do believe they're going to do a lot of terrible things. I do believe a lot of harm is coming our way. I do believe a lot of workers are going to be injured, killed. I do believe that families are going to go hungry. I do believe that bad things are going to happen to good people. But can't stop it. This is what percentage of our population voted for, this kind of anger and hatred, this kind of jealousy, this kind of personal greed. It's my tax dollars. And you stop and you think about it for a bit. What kind of a country are we going to be? Out of the chaos, and I've said this repeatedly, and I've had people, you know, yell at me, going, well, you want people to... No, I don't. I don't want anyone to suffer. But it seems to be the only time that we wake up. And it's going to have to hit the people who put this guy into the White House. Now, it's interesting to me, I've run into a lot of people recently who are regretting their vote for Trump. They're regretting their casting a ballot for a guy who's doing the things he's doing, because... There you go. Well, I didn't want this. Yeah, I wanted cheaper eggs. I wanted a life where I could afford to put a roof over our head. I didn't want all this chaos. I didn't want all this destruction. I didn't want to steal food from the mouths of children overseas. I didn't want to steal food from the mouths of children here. And they're regretting it at this point. And there's an opportunity for Democrats to go, hey, we've got a way forward. But that's going to have to come with actually doing some stuff. Now, I have people saying, "Well, you know, Rick, you know the courts, they're gonna help." And the reality is no, bad things are going to happen. You know, I just saw a story that FEMA, the FEMA, a senior FEMA official, has instructed all of the bureaucracy to freeze funding across grant programs. And, you know, it was just hours after a federal judge ordered the Trump administration for the second time to stop this kind of act. They're going to do it anyway. The law doesn't matter to them. For instance, a judge ordered the CDC and the FDA to restore their websites, you know, talking about HIV, health risks for youths, you know, assisted reproductive technology, a bunch of stuff that they just, yeah, we don't need. Judge ordered to restore it. Do you think they're going to do it? Answer is no. These people, they believe they're above the law. And it's going to take us, and this is where I want to leave this, because I've had this conversation too many times recently. Elon Musk, Donald Trump, you know, Joe Biden, none of these people are saviors. And I've said this about politicians in the past. They're tools. None of them are heroes. None of them are saviors. They're tools to get what we the people need. And for far too long, we the people haven't been getting the things that we need from our government. We need good schools, safe neighborhoods, good jobs, safe jobs, the kind of jobs that you can raise a family on with health care and retirement security. We need an infrastructure in this country that shares the wealth in a way that it's broadly shared. We need the kind of prosperity we had decades ago. And that only happens through government action, which is why you're seeing the richest man in the world spending enormous sums to take over our government. You know, my grandfather always used to say, if a rich guy spends a buck, takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because he understands return on investment. Elon Musk spent $250 million. We don't have any idea what his return on investment has been so far. Or what it's going to be. But I'll tell you, he's going to get it. And then when they're done, there's no one to hold them accountable. There's no one to restrain their greed, their savagery, their hatred of working people. Now, I've said before that I believe that the Musks of the world, the right-wing intelligentsia, they believe that, you know, we don't need workers anymore. We're gonna automate. AI is taking over everything. Which is why I do think that Musk is so deep into this, the collection of data to be able to create his super brain. But when they get past, when they're post-human, what happens to the working people of this country, of this planet? I've had people tell me a civil war is coming. And I said, probably, but just not the kind you think. It's not going to be white or black. It's not going to be red hat or blue hat. It's going to be the Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. Doesn't change. 100 years, doesn't change. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, the attack on the federal government is an attack on families. It's an attack on veterans. And again, these are the people who tell us how much they care about veterans, how much they love them, how much they love taking photos with them. I got an email, and I've gotten a bunch of these kind of emails over the last several months. But this one was, you know, the one that grabbed my attention today. Barry in Atlanta writes, I've never been a union a member of any union. However, my father and several of my uncles and aunts were. Dad spent his entire working life employed by our federal government, 4 years in the Army Air Force during World War II, and 34 years as a U.S. postal worker. His income was our primary financial resource. Looking back, I now realize just how much that meant to me as a child. We never lacked for anything. Dad would be appalled and angered at what has happened to our nation. He and millions of others from his generation fought and died to save our world from fascism. The legacy they have left us has been betrayed. And look, I've gotten a lot of this because these are the people of my generation who are looking back at their parents and their grandparents and saying, hey, you know, they came back from World War II fighting fascism, the kind of authoritarianism that we're living through right now. They fought and bled and died for, only to find that their grandchildren and great-grandchildren are now embracing it, embracing this kind of tough guy. It's a corporate, you know, we're more corporate this time. But it's the same outfit. It's the same look. It's Elon Musk's case, same salute. But what Barry talks about is what a lot of folks do. Hey, and this is the problem. Hey, you know, I've never been a union member, but I remember. I remember Dad, I remember my uncles, I remember Grandpa, I remember people who had good wage jobs, one income supporting a family. Grandma stayed home, raised the kids, picket fence, cars in the driveway, vacations, send the kids off to college. There was a time where you could have the American dream. Now, I don't use the term middle class. I find it to be a construct that I don't think means anything. I do believe that we need a prosperous working class. Those of us who go to work and punch a clock for a living, those of us who collect a paycheck and at the end of the week it doesn't stretch far enough, you're working class. And I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're a lawyer or flipping burgers. If you're punching a clock for somebody and you're earning an hourly wage, you're a worker. And what I want is prosperity for the working class. But when I hear stories like Barry's, I know so many people, and I've gotten so many responses from people who are saying this exact thing. Now, what they're going to do, what Doge Boy and the Orange Menace are going to do, is they're going to destroy that pathway. Spent 4 years in the Army. His father did. 34 years for the Postal Service. Working for the government. Good wages, good benefits, good retirement. Dignity. Respect, prosperity. The reason people are upset is that's gone. That opportunity to do a job and to earn a living, gone. Because of the Musks of the world, because of the outweighed power. And I've had numerous people go, well, how would you fix it? You got a magic wand, how do you fix it? And I said, first thing you got to do is you got to deal with our tax code. Our tax code is insane. You're going to tell me someone like Musk, who's the richest man on the planet, is going to pay a lower tax rate than the person who's, you know, flipping burgers or working in New Jersey at the gas station pumping gas or pumping gas like when I was a kid? How is that sane? I'm not even talking about fairness. I'm talking about if you're putting together a country, how can you have that? How can you have one person who has such outweighed power and control? You shouldn't. Which is why they're doing what they can right now to neuter our ability to hold them in check. But as they go and they downsize government, as they go and they squeeze government down and fire people and destroy agencies and stop helping here, there, stop investing in technology, as we continue to do that, that opportunity to be like Barry's father, you know, work that job diminishes. and we get a whole lot more desperate. You know, the fact of the matter is there are too few people who know what a union job means to people, what those health care benefits and what the retirement security means. And sadly, we've become a generation where if someone hasn't, I got to tell you, I've talked about my situation. As folks know, back in September of last year, my wife was in a near-fatal motorcycle accident, spent almost 6 months in hospital after hospital, after rehab center, after hospital, you know, just, you know, every service, everything you can imagine. You know, a few days ago, we brought her home and we're caring for her at home. And for everyone who reached out and wished us great good luck and good wishes and good juju and thoughts and prayers and all of that, thank you. I appreciate it. But I'm also cognitive of how fortunate that I am. And I don't say that to be braggadocious. I don't say this to be, hey, look at me. I want everyone to have the kind of security that I've been able to have. The healthcare benefits that we have that has made this journey so much easier. I honestly have no idea how working families would get through what we've been going through without the kind of insurance, without the kind of wages and the kind of solidarity you find in the labor movement. And it's those stories that I think are really important to tell. But it's just not me telling you. I've had people who know me who've gone, wow, I didn't realize. That's impressive. And that used to be magnified across our economy. Everybody knew somebody who was in a union. Everybody knew somebody whose life was made better. Their family's lives were made better. Because their work, their labor was fairly compensated. It's not about making a killing. It's about making a living. And when you've got the Elon Musks of the world, when you've got the Bezoses, when you've got the kind of outweighed power and wealth that these folks have, and the kind of control to force feed bad media and propaganda down your throat at every opportunity, democracy dies. We the people die. Because they do understand. They understand all too well when the pitchforks comes out, when the pitchforks come out, it's their heads on the platters. And they seem to be very masterful at pitting us against each other. I do believe we have to get back to talking to each other. Yelling at each other on social media, be like keyboard warriors trying to get your little dig in. That's not how we do this. I don't miss an opportunity to talk to a worker. If I'm in line at the grocery store, if I'm at the Home Depot, if I'm anywhere, I'm talking about wages, hours, conditions. I'm talking about, hey, how are they treating you here? Hey, what kind of benefits you got? Do you think you deserve better? Do you think you earn better? Because there's a difference. We hear, oh, I deserve. Well, do you earn it? And the answer is most of the vast majority of us earn a whole lot more than we get. And for me, that's what unions are about. Now, we've been force-fed a whole different narrative. And that's sad. Because I think of the lives that Trump and Musk and these teenagers are destroying. The families that are being destroyed because for political gain, we're going to crush government agencies. Of bureaucracy, of bureaucrats who are simply doing what they were told to do by Congress. That's the part that gets me. You know, these agencies are set up to allocate resources in the way that's been laid out for them. But Trump and Doge and the rest of them, they don't like that. They want patronage. They want loyalty. They want, I tell you to jump, and you jump higher than I expect. This is where we are, folks. And until we come around to the idea that our only savior is us, our only saviors are our neighbors, the people who stand to our right and our left, There's no one I don't talk to. Ask my kids. It drives them crazy. We have to continue to communicate. Even with the most vile people that I know, and I do reach out to them. Because in order for us to turn this country around, to make it great in a way that we believe it should be, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us working in the same direction, rowing in the same direction, demanding the things that we want and need, not just for ourselves, but our children and future generations. And I know, sounds preachy, and it is, but there are no saviors. This is where this gets tough. It's hard work. It's a lot of work. But I do believe in us. I believe in this country. I believe in you. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Winter weather advisory continues, additional 1 to 3 inches possible, a cloudy sky overnight, low of 5. For tomorrow, a clearing sky for the afternoon, highs into the low teens. Snow chances return on Friday, accumulations likely again.
Currently, we're at 15.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, President Trump assigned an executive order, more tariffs. 25% tariff on steel and aluminum, and that's across the board, right? That's going to be Canada, it's going to be Mexico, it's going to be China, it's going to be all of them. And look, I'm not necessarily against, you know, tariffs on steel and aluminum. We need them. But I don't know. I'm not jumping in to go, he's doing the right thing. I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And here to share some thoughts of who knows what tomorrow could bring, I've asked my good friend Scott Paul to come to share some thoughts. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you.
So more tariffs. On Sunday, China slapped us with a little touch of tariffs. Monday, you got Trump saying, more. Where are we?
Yeah. So obviously, it is a word that he's used just about every day of his presidency. And he has signed a bunch of stuff. But I think you kind of boiled it down. What's actually happened right now is that there is a 10% tariff, additional tariff, on Chinese products. That's the one thing that has taken effect. China did a little bit of retaliation, which we can talk about, because I thought it was kind of like a little. They felt like they had to do something, but they didn't want to do too much. And so it was kind of like in that part. And then he's made all these other announcements. And so, and to review, last week it was Mexico and Canada. And he said, I'm going to do 25% on them. And then he said, well, no, I got my border guards that may have already been there, and I got my promises. So we're going to put that off. We're going to, for a while. Apparently there'll be some sort of negotiation with Mexico and Canada, and those tariffs, which are on a broad array of goods, may or may not go into effect on March 4th. So, yeah, Monday, Trump says we're going to do steel and aluminum tariffs. And this is the part, because I don't expect everybody to be tuning in all the time on trade policy, Rick, as much as I would like it, right? That's because I do it every day. But just as a reminder, we, you know, Trump first put steel and aluminum tariffs on in March of 2018.
Right.
Okay. 25% tariffs on steel, 10% on aluminum. And then before they took effect, he announced a lot of exemptions and exclusions. Like there could be a bunch of products that were excluded if folks said we can't get them in the United States. And then they made some arrangements with other countries, and they didn't end up putting tariffs on Mexico and Canada because of the renegotiated USMCA. There were some deals reached with some other countries like Brazil and Korea and the EU over time. Biden kept all of that into place, basically. But now Trump has basically set, you know, hit the reset button on those and said, you know what, we're gonna start that whole process over. We're gonna set the level at 25% for all steel and aluminum. And at least for now, it's gonna apply to all countries everywhere. This also is not scheduled to take effect until I believe March the 4th as well. So so there's a bit of a delay, and so some things could happen between now and then. But I will say, generally speaking, there is a good rationale to have steel and aluminum tariffs.
Absolutely.
We can debate which countries it should be applied to, at what level, but a couple things are very clear. You know, we need steel and aluminum for our national security, right? It's a base product of virtually every platform, weapon system, any type of stuff. Even though we're in a digital world, almost all of that is still made out of steel and or aluminum, right? And so that's fact number one. And we want to be able to make our own here. Fact number two is that our industry is still kind of like just hobbling along. I mean, a healthy steel industry is what they call an 80% of capacity. That means your plants are operating at about 80% of what they could make, at least. And that allows the companies to make enough money to invest back into those factories, to upgrade them, to get workers a pay raise, and maybe even to expand production. It's not at 80%, and it's a lot closer to 70%. And that means that they're just kind of treading water, which is not a good place for them to be in. Then the last factor is that China continues to dump a bunch of steel on the global market. They're just making way more steel than they could possibly ever consume in China. And this is China's new economic development strategy because they've run out of tricks. They can't do real estate. They can't do this. They can't do that. And so they're like, they can't do infrastructure. So they're back to saying, we're just going to make stuff again, more than anybody could possibly need. We're just going to make stuff. And so, unfortunately, the rest of the world has to deal with that. And the United States still has pretty open markets. And so we get, even though we don't get a ton of steel directly from China, you know, it's find its way here. Yep. Either because it's transformed into something in Vietnam and it comes in, or they've made an investment in Mexico and it comes in through there, but it's still having this impact. So the rationale, I get it. We can talk about the details if this is actually going to happen. But yeah, and then we may get another announcement or two yet this week about other things as well. So
depends on the news cycle. Something must be coming on a bike on March 4th if all of this is on that day. But you know, I was watching this on one social media platform, and it's this mock-up of you know, like an infographic of year by year by year for the last 50 years in steel production, and the U.S. had been at the top of that list for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, just nosedive. The end. You know, the Soviet Union had passed us, and we were fighting with them. And then once China came on the scene, it wasn't even close. I mean, you know, we were in the 100 million pound tons or whatever it is, and then China just went from there to a million in no time at all. And it's not even close how much China produces, and they consume very little of it. So it's got to go, as you said, it's got to go somewhere, and it ends up here. Now, I've got my liberal friends who go, that's great. We can do a lot of stuff for cheaper costs. My problem is isn't the steel kind of crap?
Well, certainly it's harder to maintain a look at quality. And for people who care about how things are made, it's not made in any sort of climate sensitive way. Let's be clear about it.
Right.
That is like the most polluting steel, on the planet that is made there. So, and unfortunately, you know, steel is a carbon intensive industry. And so if you want more greenhouse gases, you're going to be rooting for this strategy, right? I mean, so they're wrong for that reason. And then the other reason is that, yeah, it sounds good on paper that you're getting something super cheap, but there is, and we've all experienced this, there are deals that are too good to be true. And that's part of it too. You know, if you can overcome even the quality concerns, or you can get past the fact that it's not made in a responsible way and it's contributing an outsized share to like global warming and all of that, and it's made in abhorrent conditions for the workers as well, then you get the fact that what happens is, in countries that are largely playing by the rules, their steel mills go out of business, their workers lose their jobs, their communities run into problems. And you know, we've seen what's happened in the United States. And so then you say, is it worth it? Yeah. You know, was it really worth it to let them do that and to undermine our security? And so we only have a couple of places in the United States that can even make armor plate or can even make any kind of specialty steel because of that same theory, Rick. If someone else can make it a whole lot cheaper and is willing to give it away to us, we should take it. That sounds great, except for when you have a need for it, that you have to have it sourced domestically, and you've run out of options because a lot of the capacity has been shut down. Yeah. In the United States, you can't mobilize a McDonald's, you can't mobilize a data center, you can't mobilize a Walmart if you need them to make something for this country. But you can mobilize a steel mill to go into service there. And God forbid we ever need something like that, but we would be completely and utterly screwed if we followed the path of that other theory that you're talking about.
Yeah, no, but this comes back to the rice and beans we learned about in Economics 101 that most people took. You know, the specialization. If one country can do it, they should do all of it. And I never bought that, never thought it was a great idea, and especially with someone who's an adversary. For instance, I was reading a Wall Street Journal article the other day, and it's talking about how, you know, China's companies are in trouble. You know, they're bleeding money. They're vulnerable because, as you've pointed out, they're overproducing. The tricks aren't working anymore, and they're really creating a massive surplus, and they're fairly vulnerable. And, you know, my mind goes into this place. Do we really want to have to be supporting that? And then maybe possibly end up in some kind of, not just a trade war like it seems like we're going to, but an actual war.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, Rick, it reminds me, and I don't know. I mean, you know, the people who get me fired up about this are like the drunk libertarian bros arguing at a bar about some esoteric economic theory that they once caught in a college class, and they got half of it, but they didn't listen to the other half, where Adam Smith said, I'm okay with protectionism for a lot of stuff, actually, because it makes a lot of sense. Or ignored the fact that, you know, Alexander Hamilton and having tariffs is how we built this country, and it's how Germany and Japan and every other industrialized country built up their industry as well. So it ignores all of that stuff, but they think they're cool because they get to regurgitate something that they once got in one economics class, but they missed everything else. And again, the problem is you do not want to have to deploy that. But we've even seen, when we've been either supplying Ukraine or thinking about Israel or whatever, that we have to think about what we can provide to them. And look, I'm setting aside whether it's wise to do that or not, okay? That's another conversation. But we're getting to the point where we have so few places in the United States that make some of this stuff that it becomes an issue. Can we afford to help our allies if they need it, right? If they're attacked, because we just don't have that capacity in the United States. And that is not what America's about, right? That's not what we're about at all. We need to, I am all for soft power. I am all for 100% for peace. But we need to have that capability to project power if we need to. And fundamentally, that starts with a healthy industrial base in the United States. Yep. And we do not have that.
No, we need, right? The arsenal of democracy. There's no question of that. We do most certainly need to have the capacity to defend ourselves. And I would hope, coming out of the pandemic, you know, that's one of those things we should all go, yeah, it makes sense now.
That's exactly right, Rick. But it's like, you know, so in this case, you know, and the only other thing I'll say about this is that, you know, it would have been the easiest thing in the world for Joe Biden to take off those steel and aluminum tariffs when he came into office, because all of the Democratic neoliberals were saying, this is horrible, this is horrible, this is horrible. And by the way, the Republican libertarians too, okay? It's not just the Democratic neoliberals who are saying this, but he didn't do it. Yeah. Because I think he realized that, you know, we got to have that capacity there. And so, so this is one case where, you know, if we do this the responsible way and we get it where the problem is, which is really China and countries that are trying to copy China or countries that China's utilizing to get their products to the United States, we can get to the heart to it. I don't know that we need to pick on Canada. I don't think that's a good idea necessarily.
Yeah, probably don't pick on your friends.
Yeah, we don't need to do that. But we do need to get at this issue. And so I for one, I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with getting this process restarted.
No, because ultimately, you know, this is an interesting moment. I mean, Trump has stepped into an interesting time. China's weak. They're desperate. And I think, you know, on Sunday with the tariffs that were retaliatory weren't, you know, that wasn't a message. I guess the message for me as an observer is that was a very weak message.
Yeah. And I don't know that China is operating from a position of strength. So I do think that we have leverage this time. A couple of things have changed, though. One is that I think China is a little more sophisticated about the tools that they could utilize to get back at us. Like, they know we want to desperately build up semiconductors in the United States, and they have a lot of that supply chain still there. And so if they can cut off that spigot, you know, they might consider doing that. Or they also know that Americans like to look at tech companies. So if they're doing, like they're doing this investigation of Google, it's ironic because Google doesn't do a lot of work in China, right? They're like, we're sick of this. We're largely not going to do a lot of work in China. But so China's doing that. But on the other hand, like, and I'm just going to be honest here, I don't know what Trump wants. Like, I don't know what he wants from China. I haven't been able to figure that out. I don't know if he wants like a zero trade deficit, if he wants a big deal with Xi Jinping, if he wants a buddy to operate TikTok. I have not figured out what he's getting at here. And I think the purpose has to be clear. And again, this is where the Biden administration started something, and they called it small yard, high fence, to try to make sure that China wasn't able to leapfrog us in terms of like technology or capability. And I don't know that the fence was tall enough or that the yard was big enough based on what we saw from the DeepSeek AI. Yeah. And so we got to think about ways to make that a little more effective. So I think there has to be a clear goal here. And I'm not certain about what that is.
And I'm not certain there is one. And that's where my concern is, because if we learned anything from the last Trump administration, there most of the time there wasn't one. There was no healthcare plan. There was nothing. There was a lot of words, a lot of bread and circus, a lot of entertainment, but not any real action. Lastly, I got to get your thoughts. There's some more talk about this de minimis trade loophole, something that I think we both agree should be slammed shut. I guess it's being reopened.
Yeah, and look, if any of your listeners utilize Shein and Temu, you do that at your own risk. I mean, you're going to get cheap stuff, but there's a cost to that that's not reflected in the price. And both of those apps utilize this loophole to get products in the United States where they don't have to pay a tariff on it, basically. And they're subject to far less inspection than regular packages are. And so, and obviously, you know, kids don't think like that, right? They're like, oh, look at this great deal I got, right? I can click a button and it's here.
And for 37 cents, I can get a race car.
They don't think about the consequences. But it's dramatically altered the retail landscape in the United States. And it's furthered limit the opportunity for entrepreneurs who want to make things in the United States to sell them here, yeah. Right? It crowds them out. And so, yeah, this de minimis thing was the loophole. It looked like it was going to be closed. Trump said, we're not going to close it yet because we've got to figure out how to control the revenue. Now, there's some people who are like, it's because he met with the CEO of FedEx and FedEx doesn't like this and he's listening to FedEx. I don't know that yet, but I do think that we need to get this loophole closed as soon as possible because it is unfair to retailers who play by the rules in the United States, even if they're sourcing some of their goods from China, and certainly to entrepreneurs who are trying to build businesses in the United States, but face this really unfair competition coming from China.
Yeah, and the other part of it is you know, most of the time you don't know where it's sourced from. So you think you're buying something that, you know, you think is somewhere here in the country, only to find out, no, if you want to return it, you got to send it back to China. And good luck paying the shipping on that.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That is a long way to ship your package back. And the next logical step from that, that's a long way to go to try to get your job back too.
Oh, absolutely. So. But it's amazing. You can get a race car for 37 cents. Somehow you can ship it here for negative dollars, but you want to ship it back. You're looking at hundreds. It's amazing at how this whole thing is set up, how the Chinese Communist government seems to be funding a lot of this. We are where we are. But Scott, as always, appreciate the time and the input. I'll look forward to having you back again real soon.
I appreciate it, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on.
Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Check out their work, AmericanManufacturing.org. Want to hear your thoughts. Have you bought anything from one of these Chinese hucksters? And was it all that it was cracked up to be? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1913. That was the day that the labor leader known as Mother Jones was arrested in West Virginia. She was there to support coal miners during the Paint and Cabin Creek strike of 1912-1913. The West Virginia coal fields were one of the bloodiest sites of labor conflict in U.S. history. The bosses had evicted the striking workers from their company homes. As a result, the strikers lived in tent camps under dire conditions. 83-year-old Mother Jones visited these camps where she gave fiery speeches. In the fall, she organized a march of the miners' children through the streets of Charleston, West Virginia. Authorities saw Mother Jones as a troublemaker and wanted to expel her from their state. On February 7th, guards hired by the bosses attacked one of the miner camps with a machine gun mounted on an armored train. One striker died. The workers responded with an attack of their own, thus giving the governor the excuse to declare martial law. Mother Jones was arrested and put on trial for murder at a military court. The basis for her arrest was a speech she had given 3 months earlier. Mother Jones refused to recognize the authority of the trial, writing in her autobiography that "my arrest and trial were unconstitutional." She was convicted and sentenced to 20 years. It was during this trial that Mother Jones was called the most dangerous woman in America. The sentence of this well-known labor leader spurred national outrage. The United States Senate ordered an investigation into the conditions of the West Virginia coal mines. West Virginians elected a new governor who released the beloved Mother Jones. Upon her release, she continued fighting for workers until the day she died at 100 years old. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So with all the talk of tariffs, you know, no one is going to lay down. Europe now is talking about a response to Trump's tariffs. And you know, it's coming. And this is one of those moments where you go, I'm not going to come out against Trump and say that I think this is terrible. It's horrible. There are some Democrats who are saying, oh, it's the Trump tax. I'm not yet. My problem with Trump is I don't think there's a plan. I don't think there's an end game other than quick fix, pat on the back, kind of, hey, look what we got done. Look at the art of the deal stuff is what concerns me. And that long term, no effect other than pain, short term pain. And for me, that's not the strategy that I was hoping for. Look, I think Biden was heading us in the right direction. I think, you know, keeping tariffs in place, reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure, doing the things that we're doing, soft power kind of, you know, negotiations. What we're seeing out of Trump is a very in your face, we're going to steal from you kind of stuff. And I've got friends who think this is the best way to go. Now, do I think we need to realign some of our trade? Yeah, absolutely. We need to rethink the whole neoliberal era. And it's interesting to see some Democrats coming out and say, well, you know, the reason Joe Biden lost is, you know, because he went too far in ending neoliberalism, which, you know, I'm not that guy. I think that's one of the things that Democrats should run from. And they should be saying, hey, how do we have a more prosperous future, not just for us, but for the globe? There has to be another Bretton Woods Accord. There has to be another sitting down of everyone and kind of realigning what trade looks like, realigning kind of what economies are looking like. Because understand, China's working their way to being totally totally sufficient on their own, self-sufficient, and making the U.S., well, just the consumer of last resort. They're investing billions of dollars in high-tech industries. They're investing huge amounts of resources in the things that, well, we should have been doing for years. But again, I'm not blaming just Democrats. I'm not blaming only Republicans. I'm blaming them all. Corporate America especially. Because, well, they saw China as a haven for cheap exploitable labor. They saw China as a place to escape environmental rules. They saw it as the kind of, hey, we can manufacture stuff in 1950s conditions. I don't care about those people or their environment or their communities or any of that. We can make real quick bank. And they did. Look, they made a lot of money. But then bad things started happening to them, like all of their intellectual property was being stolen. They were retro-engineering their products and then basically made them useless. And this is where we are. And corporate America is okay with some of this because they know they went too far. Now, my problem again with Trump is not the fact that he's making these pressure moves. My problem is I don't think there's a plan. I'm not against the idea of putting tariffs on countries that cheat. Absolutely. But I'm not so sure that you do it to your friends right away because you might want to encourage them to help take on the people who are really cheating everyone. And as I said, you know, with Scott, you know, I saw this infograph where they went year by year by year and you know, how much steel was made by each country. And a lot of the top five were close. The U.S. was ahead, but and the Soviet Union was would come ahead. And Germany was there and Canada was there and India was there and all right around the same amount. And then China came on the scene and almost immediately surpassed U.S. production. Almost immediately surpassed the global production. And now to the point where not only have they surpassed everyone, they've surpassed everyone combined. You know, their margin of error is about what we create in steel in this country. And understand, you know, where Scott is, you know, really, I think, spot on is when you're talking about national defense, you're talking about building warships. And I know that's 20th century thinking, but you may have to. You need steel. You need those inputs. And for me, you know, the reality is if you don't have the ability to produce, you very quickly will not be a superpower. And this is where I'm with Trump. I think we do need to put tariffs on steel and aluminum. I think we do need to build those, to make those materials here. I think we should have been doing a lot of stuff during his years to not give up Africa and not give up other countries where minerals were. But, you know, my red hats don't want to hear that. They're all hell-bent on, let's go get Greenland. Gulf of America. And the question that I keep coming back to is this going to make our lives any better? Is what Trump is doing going to make your life better? And interestingly enough, as I said before, there are a lot of folks who are not thrilled. Not thrilled with what the Donald's been doing, especially with Doge Boy. A lot of people regretting that vote. We'll see how this plays out. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said got under your skin, under your thought process, made you mad, made you angry, happy, sad. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast, freespeech.org. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at Rick. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. What Ukraine's borders will eventually look like to be determined by negotiation. President Trump said Zelensky and Putin agreed to for their people to start negotiations immediately.
The negotiation side, the president said that for the United States, it will be Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the director of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, his national security advisor, Mike Waltz, and also his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, who will be leading the charge for the United States.
ABC's Karen Travers. Going in the wrong direction, the government says inflation was running at a 3% annual rate in January. The general consensus among economists was that it would drop a little. Attorney General Pam Bondi sued New York's governor, attorney general, and motor vehicles chief over the state's sanctuary laws that bar police from asking for immigration status during traffic stops. Bankrupt Joann Fabrics to close 500 of its 850 stores nationwide. This is ABC News. The two crew members after are okay after their U.S. Navy warplane crashed.